Hello, and welcome to French Tech News with Chris O'Brien and Ethan Pierce, an audio and video podcast and clubhouse series highlighting important stories in English in the world of France's startups, its entrepreneurs, investors, and ecosystem leaders. Our objective is to continue to open this incredible ecosystem up to the Anglophone startup and investment community worldwide. And speaking of the podcast, head on over to Apple or Spotify and search for French Tech News and give that a subscribe. There you will find all of our past discussions and interviews. Clubhouse asks us to remind our speakers, as well as anyone who would like to ask a question, that we are recording this room to be published as an episode of the podcast. Links and notes to rooms, future events, podcasts, all that good stuff, and especially the French Tech Journal newsletter, are over at frenchtechnews.club. Go over and give that a look and sign up for the newsletter. That would be great. And now on to tonight's event. I would like to welcome our fantastic guests this evening from Aircall: Olivier Payes, CEO, Jonathan Angelov, COO, and Pierre-Baptiste Béchu, Head of Platform and Infrastructure. Welcome, everyone.
Hello, Ethan.
Hello.
Hello, thank you.
Excellent. Good to have all of you here. Welcome, Chris, from Kansas, still hanging out in the Midlands. Good to have you, and looking forward to our discussion. Chris, I'll let you jump on in with your questions.
Yes, from the western French province of Kansas. Thank you, Ethan, for that introduction. Great to have all you guys here. Thanks for taking time with us tonight, or in my case, at lunchtime. So I thought actually what would be helpful, if each of you can just briefly kind of introduce yourself and your role at Aircall, so we kind of have some context about what each of you do there. Jonathan, maybe I'll start with you.
All right. Hi, everyone. So I'm Jonathan. I'm one of the co-founder. Since day one, I've been always in charge of revenue in general. So today I'm in charge of the whole EMEA plus APAC region, and for the growth in general. So I have all the sales departments, customer success department, partnerships, etc., under myself. And my role is very simple, is make sure we still grow at a fast pace on those regions, which represent about 70% of our revenue.
And Pierre, do you want to take the baton?
Yes. Hello, everyone. So I am Pierre Baptiste, one of the co-founders of Aircall. So since the beginning, I was on the tech side of things. Now I am leading the teams called Platform Infrastructure, which are responsible to make sure the services running 24/7 everywhere in the world and with the best quality of service for our customers.
And Olivier, we'll finish with you. Would you like to introduce yourself? And your role might be a little bit more obvious given the title, but please introduce yourself.
Yeah, maybe shorter. So I'm Olivier, and one of the co-founders and CEO.
Very simple. Well, Olivier, since you got the short answer there, I'm gonna stick with you for a minute. So, how did you guys all meet? How did things get started between you in terms of founding Aircall?
Okay, so we met in 2014, and I think the main driver was thinking about the phone systems out there and the way people use the phone, and thinking how dry that was and how big the opportunity was to build something just much richer, much more integrated with all the other tools. Of course, removing any physical device, any physical phone, but going much further than that. So I think that brought us together.
Did you guys know each other? Were you buddies from university, or did you run into each other at a cafe one day?
No, so we started in a startup studio called eFounders. So they gathered us. So we all knew someone of eFounders in Paris, in the ninth arrondissement, and that's where we met and started working together.
To make it simple, it's our first investor that brought us together.
And was this? I mean, I'm a little familiar with eFounders, of course. Was this kind of, you know, they have different approaches, I guess, within their startup studio. But did someone there sort of was thinking about this idea and then brought you guys together, thinking you're the right team to make this reality?
Yeah. So I mean, one of the founders of eFounders, Quintin, is a very long time friend of mine in the late 20th century. So a long time ago. And yeah, what eFounders, what they do is they really look at all the processes that exist in businesses. So they look at email, they look at, you know, whatever, learning, social media, and phone. And so they started with saying, okay, there's, you know, this is a space where the solutions out there are not great. And then they kind of brought the idea of, can we build something? And then we teamed up to think about, okay, then what would that be as a product? And that's how we started building the product with specifically with Thibaut and Quentin, a few founders.
Jonathan and Pierre Baptiste, feel free to jump in on this, but knowing e founders a little bit, you know, I know again they go through a process of putting together the right people, how you fit together. Did you all kind of have to evaluate each other and sort of say, okay, these are the guys I want to really launch into this adventure with, or how did that work from your side of it?
The beginning of a startup is always interesting. So we had, as part of eFounders, there's a bunch of people, and you know, you team up in a very flexible way, right? And finally, yesterday I was talking to one of the first guy called Mathieu Vaxeller, who then became an entrepreneur, and he worked a bit as well on the Aircall project. And so people come help for a few weeks, a few months, and then we see the chemistry happens. Sometimes it's born and people jump out. And what happened with us? So there were multiple people. There was a designer, there was other developers, and even other business people that collaborated on Aircall. But then after a few months, then we felt, okay, we're actually have a great chemistry. We're actually four co-founders. One is not here. He left Aircall a year ago. But then we had John, Zav, and me. Then we thought, okay, we've got this great chemistry between us. We're very complementary in terms of personalities. We have the sales side, we have the more product side, we have the back end, we have the front end, and we just like each other. And we share a lot of things in common on how to work and a lot of respect. And so naturally then the idea crystallized in a sense around this founding team. And then from there, then we started, you know, hiring and growing the team. That's how I see that. I don't know how you see that, by the way, John and PB.
Yeah, so one of the funding moments for us was when we later on moved to San Francisco for a period of 4 months, doing a startup accelerator called 500 Startups, where I think we made a new step to the product and to the company itself.
I mean, basically what I found interesting about our story, and I always say it like that way, is that we are coming from very different backgrounds. And we all have one thing very specific that helped the project from day one to work. And I still remember the first day I spoke with each of my co-founders, either Pierre Baptiste or Olivier or Xavier. I remember Olivier figuring out right away that he was very different of me on several things, his background, several things, and I felt all what he's missing, I'm missing, he probably has it. And the same for Pierre Baptiste. When he was talking to me about tech, I was not understanding anything, basically. So I knew we needed to all work together, and we are complementary somehow. And I think that the best founder story are where people actually are very different and don't necessarily match on a skill set or on hard skills, but mostly on soft skills, which, in my opinion, it was what made us stick together and go through all the difficulties that we had at Airco, because we had a few, a lot even, and it made us stick together, work together, and get us where we are today, being a company with over 450 employees across the world.
So you guys have sort of hinted at it, but let's talk about what Aircall actually does. And you mentioned, I think it was Olivier, sort of the idea originally as it was seen in the early days with eFounders. But what was the thing that you guys thought you could disrupt in terms of phones and call systems? And tell us a little bit now about what that looks like in terms of what Aircall actually does for people.
So what's interesting, basically, is that we all had a common idea that there was a problem into the phone system industry in general. So when you had to call, you put a phone in place in a company, it was extremely complicated. It takes time. It's hardware. You plug, you unplug, you test it. It works. It doesn't work. It depends. It was complex. Plus, it was not communicating with the other tools that those same companies were using. So I love to take that example of the call center that you call from your favorite e-commerce. And it's always the same thing happening. And still today, I still love to call customer service department, and I still get this same question you get every time is, hi, can I get your phone number or your name, please? While you're already a customer and you already shared your phone number several times in different forms, and they do have it somewhere, but just the databases are not connected to the phone system. And we figured out that we need to go towards that. And so that's what AirCall does, is that we allow companies all over the world without any barriers to create their entire phone system infrastructure for the customer service departments, for sales departments, but also for the entire company. And we allow the companies to connect it to the tools that matters to them. So usually it's CRMs for sales departments or help desk for customer service departments, but it can be connected to any other tools, basically. And so when you go deeper into what we do, we have the conversations, we have what they say. So next step is, how do we analyze that? How do we give the right insights to the companies so that they can provide these insights to their employees to make them better and work better and faster, basically.
Actually, Jonathan, one of my personal favorite things is not just when I call and they don't have my information, but when I give them my information and they transfer me four or five times and I have to keep giving the same information to a new person, which just...
But it's exactly that.
It's 2020. Yeah, keep thinking it's 2021. How is the company internally not even connected to from one department to the next? So it's you're right. It's absolutely maddening.
No. Yeah, it's funny because we're being tracked every day, everywhere, by many, many tools and softwares, but not when we need it, which is like, I want to talk to someone and then they can't locate me. I agree. It's funny.
One of the tech companies that I know well in Paris has a setup where I'm sure it's probably maybe even with you, but where whenever you call in, the system is smart enough to not only know that it's you because you're calling from your phone so they can actually address you correctly, but also more importantly, it routes you to the same customer service or technical support agent every single time if they're available. That way you can keep these conversations going and in a way that, you know, keeps... You don't have to be repeating things all the time. You create a history. People understand the overall development of things.
The whole point at the end of the day is, and that's what drives us very deeply with building AirCall, is customer satisfaction. How can we make on both sides, for a sales department or for a success department or for a customer support department, how can we make customers more happy? And it's by delivering the best service you can have when you interact with those most important people that a company has, which is their customers, their prospects, and every other interaction they have with external people, basically.
Well, you know, that's it interesting, Olivier, because, you know, the tone we're getting here makes me think about just in general, our recent history with customer service. I mean, there's the technology part of it, which is certainly, lacking still in for many of the people you're trying to target. But just in general, you know, there was sort of a philosophical shift that a lot of companies saw customer service as a cost center. And so, you know, they were mostly focused on how do we spend the least amount of money on this? How do we outsource it? How do we just, you know, do anything we can to avoid actually talking to one of our customers. And, you know, anybody who's been on the wrong end of that conversation knows that anytime you get great customer service, like having a really amazing experience, it makes you such a fan of that brand. It's such a missed opportunity when they don't make that a great experience for you.
Yeah. And it's funny, if you look back the past year, you look at COVID, many things changed, but essentially it's a moment where companies are even closer to their customers because a lot of things are changing in everybody's lives. And that's the moment where you want to stick with the brands that take care of you. And we see a lot of customers coming to us, one, because of course AirCall helps them just, you know, adapt to work from home and be super flexible. You can just basically use AirCall from anywhere, right? Any device, anywhere. But not only, as well, because they wanted to make sure that they make a step up in the customer relations in a tough, you know, last year in the post COVID, you know, struggle that we all lived in Q2, Q3.
Well, let me come back to the COVID discussion in a moment. I want to kind of continue back on your journey a little bit. You know, I forget if it was Pierre Baptiste or Jonathan, but one of you had mentioned, you know, that there were some challenges along the way. So you have this concept, you're starting to develop the technology. What were the biggest hurdles, and what were kind of the roadblocks you face in terms of actually developing the platform and then finding those first customers?
Oh, PB, that's for you, this one.
Yeah, I think the initial challenges this kind of systems is first the reliability and the stability over multiple countries, because Aircall was international from day one. So it means that to work from US, from Europe, or from Asia, from the beginning. And one of the main roadblocks also at the beginning was the fact that we addressed a lot of different users that were using phone system on a lot of different platforms. So we had to build right from the beginning applications on iOS, Android, Mac, Windows, and the browser Chrome in order to make sure our users can access our apps everywhere, which is a proposition value of the product. And continuing to build all of that while the business is still growing like crazy, so 2 or 3 weeks per year, was really one of the main challenge, initial challenge, and still a challenge, of course, at this scale.
And then one challenge, any entrepreneur in the telco business would tell you is that if we want to be international, we need to have the same quality of service all over the world. And that's probably the biggest barrier to entry to that business, is that how you provide the exact same quality, or at least an enterprise-grade quality, of course, to companies that are in Australia, the same that are in France, UK, US, etc. And that is extremely difficult. That's why usually, and if you look at our competition is very focused on one or a few countries. And mainly, I mean, almost only Aircall has this approach, very global from day one. And that was like one of the biggest challenges of the tech in general, to be able to address the market. And of course, it was with a lot of mistakes and roadblocks, but it's by putting focus and a lot of resources there that we were able to get into something that works the same way anywhere in the world.
And so, Jonathan, does that mean that you had to have the whole platform, the technology, the back end all ready before Aircall could really start to pursue those kind of customers?
That's in theory. So should I say the truth here? No, yeah, of course, we should have done it that way. But the reality is that we didn't do it that way. So we started with what we had and we said, okay, let's go international. Let's take any customer anywhere in the world. Let's make it work. And honestly, it was very difficult. Our three first year at Aircall, and if some of our customers are here from that time, they would tell you Aircall wasn't working very well. Quality of voice was not the best, had a lot of issues, etc. Because we made that choice to go crazy international and without having that quality focus and that quality infrastructure that can handle customer all over the world. And when I look back at that time, and Olivier, correct me if I'm wrong, but when I look back at that time, I don't regret, because we had to do it and that made us be there today, where we are today. But of course, it was extremely risky and we had a bad reputation for our during our four first year. That today, we sometimes we even still have to prove to ex-customers or people that heard about Aircall from a friend of a friend that, hey, there was problems of quality. And so that was the issue with going too fast, too far, and too crazy. which is a risk, your reputation. And your reputation takes time to change. And it took us 4 or 5 years almost of continuous quality improvement, continuous quality teams, even data people only doing that data analysis on our core quality to go to the next level. And I think today, that's also one of our main quality at Airco, and that is the barrier that we have a top-grade quality all over the world. And we are very proud of that infrastructure that we have today.
Yeah, that's amazing, because I think that sounds like a moment when, let's say, a lot of startups could have fallen apart, or the team, you know, fell out, or there's a lot of finger pointing. And it sounds like you guys, the four founders, really managed to ride through that period and get to the other side where you are now.
I'm not sure we truly realize the scope of the issues, really. You know, we're so heads down on trying to, you know, figure out so many things. I think now with hindsight, we're looking back and say, whoa, it was tough to be an Apple customer in 2015, honestly. you got some value, you got integrations, you get data, and it was cool, but then just plain cold quality, just make a call, it works. There's no latency and stuff. That was tough. But at the time, we had so many things to deal with. So we're just, you know, going heads down, and then at some point went out, you know, look back and say, oops, that was tough. So I don't think we ever thought about, okay, we're not going to make it, because we were just constantly fixing things. And that was one of the things to fix. Okay, let's work on it. And as long as we go forward, there's hope. So yeah, it was different mentality probably at the time.
So in the light of all of those different challenges, maybe we can talk a little bit about funding. You guys raised $65 million in May of 2020. As we look at that, can we kind of go into maybe a little bit more about how that worked out for you, how the difficulties, the opportunities moving ahead? I mean, that's a lot of money. So as far as a runway goes, that's also important for a lot of startups that went into COVID without one. Maybe just some thoughts around how that funding came about and how it's taken you through kind of the pandemic.
We obviously we had a very own sense of timing in terms of fundraising. So we started fundraising, I think, late Jan last year. Got the first term sheets beginning of March. I remember very well, because mid-March, there was a specific week in March where the US just, you know, the US borders got closed and it was panic everywhere. Everybody was sent home. That was exactly that week. These few days where we're negotiating the final terms of one of the term sheets for lead. And we're like, okay, really details, nitty-gritty, small rights on whatever. Very, very, very secondary items. And then like the next day, President Trump just stopped everything, and then Europe followed. And then it was a few weeks where it was sheer panic for investors to some extent, right? The Dow Jones fell, whatever, 20% or 30%, whatever. And then suddenly, like, you know, we had a few term sheets on the table, but then investors saying, oops, okay, maybe the world is changing. So maybe we'll put a bit less money and da da da. And finally, so we faced a choice, which is, do we close around now? And it's more complicated, so we can't negotiate much more, and we'll have to. Every investor was more cautious. We had to gather more investors together to make the round, or do we wait 3 or 6 months? And the reasoning was to say, and we had the cash to wait like 6 months, so we could have done that. Of course, you're looking from now, we should have done that. But what we felt at the time is, what we know is, if we get this funding, we're going to execute like crazy. We're going to create fundamental value. We're going to grow the company. We're going to grow our product, develop our product, improve our product, get in new geography, sign new deals. And that matters over everything else. Because if we don't get that money in, and in 3-6 months we can't raise for whatever reason, then we're putting Airco at risk of just becoming a slow growth company. And there's no way that ever happens. So we said, okay, well, we'll take the round now. We'll start negotiating, get the money in, and then, you know, follow our way. And it was a good and a bad decision. It was a good decision for the good reasons that we crushed it last year, continued growing. I mean, of course, we got a lot of tailwinds, new customers, we could scale the team, expand in Asia, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, you know, when you look back now, you say, hey, you know, we would have gotten a much better valuation 3 or 6 months down the road. But we didn't know that. So personally, I don't regret it. But that was a bit hectic when you face this kind of, you know, left or right. And it's a one-way door. So if you don't raise now, you can't go back. And if you raise now, you can't go back either. You can't renegotiate afterwards the valuation. So, but I think we made probably the right choice looking from now.
Well, just then to stay on the COVID theme for a minute, Olivia, you'd mentioned, you know, obviously this was a big year for you. We've heard that theme a lot from different companies that digital transformation really accelerated last year in a number of sectors, from e-commerce to education to video communication. So were you guys then, in terms of the platform and in terms of where the company was, were you prepared for that surge? Did you have the things in place you needed, or was it a scramble to really to keep up with this sudden demand?
I can start here and let John and PB give their perspective. I think it went really fine. My two cents. I mean, first, we're a very flexible cloud-based software, so we design for agility and for scale. And you know, with very self-service. So our customers could really just, you know, take their computers and take their mouse and boom, and just adapt. And we got a lot of new customers coming in, especially end of March, beginning of April. Like the whole world rushed to us. Like we got customers, like huge customers, UCLA, so the Californian University, huge, huge setup. And they just panicked. But it was fine. It was really fine. We struggled a little bit in our onboarding team, right? So because it's a team where we help customers, you know, when they have a particular setup, and we like to add this onboarding so that customers really discover the value a little bit. But fundamentally, people were just looking for an immediate solution that they can deploy in minutes. Well, that's what Echo does. That fundamentally, this is what we do. So my perspective, again, with hindsight, looking back from now, I don't say it was easy, but it wasn't that complicated. And we could manage that even with our current team. I don't know what you think, John and PB. Maybe I'm too optimistic there, but I felt it was okay.
And one thing that I can add is how good the teams were able to adapt, also to work from one day to another, and to keep the productivity high and to things that needed to be done, because of course there was a lot of pressure on the telecom networks in general in the world. It was not Aircode specific, so a lot of work, but great work from the teams that were able to adapt in this period.
And the period was extremely, I mean, during during all 2020, we hired, I think, about 150 people. So during that pandemic, we actually organized even the company, the HR, everything to be able to keep recruiting. And we basically, during the period of the confinement, I think was March to May, we hired about 60 people during that period and 150 over the whole 2020. So we actually adapted the entire processes, onboarding, HR departments of the company to be able to keep growing. So the company was actually more than ready for that. It was a great moment where we figured out that actually the company can perfectly work remotely. And it's been over a year now. And we are still in a hyper growth mode. And at the same time, of course, the world is coming back now. Offices will open again. Life will be back to normal. And so we are even more excited about that future because Airco goes into that trend of helping companies not necessarily work from an office every day, 5 days a week.
So let's stay with the hiring theme for a moment. You guys, certainly at least here in France, made a lot of headlines with your announcement, your projection that I believe, and please correct me if this is wrong, that I think your plan is to hire 300 people in 2021. So again, correct me if that number is wrong, but what is the plan there? I mean, what are these people for? Is that marketing, developing the platform, sales? Where are the big needs for this year?
The plan is world conquest. right? So, and so you need all the skills in the world. So there's not one specific thing. We're very focused on tech. I mean, we're a product-led growth story, right? So our product makes a difference. We're disrupting an old industry. We feel old solutions. So the better the product, the stronger we are. And especially we want to be the best partner for all the other softwares that our customers use, whether it's CRM, help desk, collaboration, anything. So tech is at the heart of our growth because that's, you know, the product, but that's as well the sales and the overall growth of the company. So a lot of focus here and a lot of focus on our European hubs in Paris and Madrid and in remote. And then across the board in all functions, of course, we want to size the company for, you know, 2x, 4x. What we talk a lot internally is 4x. So we're always thinking we're going to be 4 times bigger than we are sooner than we think. And sooner means we need to start planning now. And so that applies to everything, finance, HR, legal, marketing. Everybody's kind of trying to think ahead. Now, specifically in the growth themes, we, as John mentioned, day one, we wanted to build a world player. So we're pushing a lot now in geographic expansion. So covering all of Europe and building, you know, making our Europe our stronghold, right? So that our US competitors, you know, don't have an easy life if they ever want to come in. And then building an APAC, right? So we have our office in Sydney. And that's just the first step to expand in Southeast Asia and then in continental Asia. So that will be specific themes for this year. Did I miss anything? John or PB?
No, pretty straightforward. Yeah. I mean, we are just growing. 2021, we're planning about 80, a bit more than 80% growth. So think about it. We are in a hyper growth mode. So yeah, we need to staff about 80% more. We don't look really yet for the scale effect today as we are investing for the future. What we are hiring today, what we're building today on the product is for 2022, 2023, et cetera, et cetera. So we are moving forward fast, finding the best talents all over the world, opening offices where we need to open offices, and make sure that, yeah, as Oli said, we conquer the world.
If I may, Chris, might not be your question, I know, but if you like to talk about challenges, I can sense from your previous questions. I think the challenge we're having now is how do you scale insanely fast, which is it's a lot for us. I mean, we're 450 people, and we're going to increase that by at least 50%, potentially more. But at the same time, it's non-negotiable. The quality of people we want to hire is non-negotiable, and we want to keep the highest level of excellence possible. And that's really a big challenge because, we need to hire like 30 people a month in tense markets. I mean, is it easy to find developers in Paris? I mean, you'll tell me it's not easy, right? Nor in Madrid, nor anywhere. It's easy to find great salespeople or marketers or finance managers. It's not easy. And so the challenge is how do we keep super high standards? But at the same time, at some point, we need people, right? We just otherwise, you know, and we were discussing that this morning in our exec team is, okay, we're a little bit stretched thin in some functions. Because we, you know, just the volume doubled in a couple of quarters, and we need to catch up, but not at all cost, and never trading off on the, let's say, the quality of the talents we get on board. It's something we really try to pay a lot of attention, because that pays off down the line, right? And that's good for everybody. It's good for the culture, but it's challenging as well for all the other colleagues. So that's a bit the tension we're having now.
Yeah, well, let me just, as an aside, say thank I. You know, I appreciate the candor of all you guys because I think, you know, part of the goal with having these conversations is, you know, for other people listening to this or the podcast later, you know, that they have some lessons to take away. And I think, you know, oftentimes there's an expectation that these kind of journeys are going to be silky smooth and, you know, everything just kind of goes up and to the right and, you know, the successful companies just hit all the right things in the right way and things took off. And I think that's often not the case. So I think it's helpful to other people to hear, you know, some of the reality that, you know, challenges come up, you deal with them, you make decisions, some are good or some are bad. And some you don't know until much later that they paid off as is the case with you guys. It sounds like you've left yourself in a very strong position You know, in that regard, then I want to talk a little bit about your competition. We've hinted at it a little bit here, but again, cloud communication is a broad category, and it's a popular one at the moment. But I think it was Jonathan earlier talking about kind of the barrier to entry that you have now that you are fully international. Do you see a lot of direct competition who are operating that level, or is it really still people who only can do bits and pieces of what you guys can do?
Of course, with the years, competition started to organize. But what we see is that depending on the country, we are not always having the same competition. Very, very different. We still have niche competitors in several markets. And of course, a few are international, like us, more and more. At least the big guys, they start to try to have a global infrastructure and be able to serve customers all over the world. But our power is really around integrations. We created our whole product with the idea that we will be able to integrate to every single tool companies are using, and we have the top integrations every time. Every time you will speak with AEs, account executive sales in general, from Salesforce, HubSpot, Intercom, and you ask for what's the best phone system to work with, Airco will always come up. Because we've created the product around them with the idea that Airco is an integration first phone system, which is different from our competition that created first a phone system and then thought, okay, oh, I need to add integrations on top of that, which makes it very difficult because infrastructure is not imagined that way, basically.
Yeah, I think, it's interesting to hear that because that is, you know, creates that additional barrier that you mentioned. And I think it's just, you know, that much tougher to come in, even when, you know, people have the resources. It's still almost starting from scratch, even if you're a giant corporation trying to do what you guys are doing and figure that out. So I think that's a great perspective. You know, I just have one more question, but if anyone else listening in wants to put up their hand as well, we'd have time for a couple of questions. But just one last thought for me, for any one of you three. You know, the international aspect has been a big component of this conversation and your story. I think most of you guys, or maybe all three of you, are based in New York now. Is that correct?
No, not at all.
Not correct.
Nope. I am.
No?
I'm calling you from New York. Yes. PB and John on the other side.
Yeah, we're in okay. Paris.
The other side being Paris.
Yeah. Being Paris, yes.
Yeah.
So
any difficulties or thoughts around just how you decided to organize that? I mean, again, you're international from day one. That's a big conversation, again, we hear with founders here is how to go international and how to set up the company. And, you know, especially if you're going to the U.S., where to set up the company. So how did you make those decisions in terms of, you know, where to be and who would be where in terms of building a truly international company?
Okay. It's generally you can see some patterns, right? And it's not like we're the first startup, right? So you have hundreds of startups who did kind of the journey we're going through now. So looking at the patterns that you see from French entrepreneurs, you have a pattern where everybody moves to Silicon Valley. Okay, fine. And you have as well a classical pattern where you say, okay, I want to take East Coast and Paris for the time zone difference. And I want to have key, let's say, business functions in the US because that's where the talent is. That's where you have like at scale startups, scale ups, right? You have large companies who, you know, where you can source talent from. You have less of those in Europe. And at the same time, so you would do that in New York and then on the East Coast, and then you would keep the tech in Europe, which we've done because you have great engineering talent in Europe. It's cheaper, it's less competitive. And so it's what we've done, right? We have our tech center in Paris, right now. We're opening a hub in Madrid, where our CTO is based. And I lived in Madrid for a long time, so as well, we kind of have some roots here. When we started Acol, I was still living in Madrid. So that's been the model we followed. So being close enough to have one company, one culture, and put COVID aside, but 6 hours, it's not easy, but it's manageable. If you go on the West Coast, 9 hours, it's just not manageable. It's very hard to keep cohesiveness and unity. And then business on one side, like typically CFO, or CFO is in New York. Makes sense, right? Down the road, it's easier to get on the stock market in New York than in Paris. It's possible in Paris, but you have much less examples of companies doing that. And sometimes you have the tech in Europe. So that was a bit our guiding principles.
No, that's fantastic. And I like, I appreciate all of the actionable insight and background, because I think one of the things that we definitely want to be focusing on French founders who are building amazing things kind of globally, whether it's in France or based from around the world, but also that is interested in hearing about how these companies have scaled up. It's great to hear all of the different little pieces about how you managed to find a great team to work together to be able to grow this thing, and then all the ways that you've kind of fought along the way to build this and get it into place and see it scale. And now you've got something really fantastic that really seems to be rocking and has got some great time in front of it to really scale significantly. So appreciate all three of you for being here. Appreciate all of your answers and everything you've contributed. If you have anything else you want to add, feel free to jump in. Otherwise, we are going to close ourselves out.
Thank you, Chris and Ethan.
Thank you so much.
Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Want more news and stories from France's incredible innovation ecosystem and its entrepreneurs? Subscribe to the French Tech News with Chris and Ethan on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and switch on notifications to be informed of new episodes as soon as they are released. You can connect with Chris and me on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Clubhouse. I am at Ethan Pierce, that's Ethan Pierce, and Chris O'Brien is at O'Brien, O-B-R-I-E-N. Let us know if there are guests that you would like to see on the interview podcast or Clubhouse, as well as any stories that we should take a look at. As always, thank you for listening, and see you next time.